What's up? It's your boys Jordan and Abraham. As always, he's a professional runner, so he's your fast friend. I'm an MD PhD student, so I'm your smart friend. But most importantly, we are your friends who read One Piece. And before we get into the chapter this week, I just want to shout out our YouTube channel and our Twitter page that are growing every day. Thanks to all of you guys that take your time to subscribe and follow and all that good stuff. Our Twitter is at FWROPPod. Our YouTube channel is Friends Who Read One Piece. Please give us a like, give us a subscription, whatever you can do. We appreciate all of it. But the title of this week's chapter is Continental Fragments. We got a lot, I think, revealed to us this chapter.
A lot,
I
man.
loved it. I loved it. We're gonna get into all of it, but Jordan, why don't you give me a rundown of some of the stuff that happened this week?
Yeah, man, this is definitely one of the densest chapters we've had in ages. Obviously, last week was pretty dense, but we're getting some of the biggest lore drops in the entire series. So, pretty exciting. We've got a lot to get into today. The cover panel kicks off with Yamato journeying through Wano, getting a bento from Hiyori and a very cute Otoko. As Vegapunk begins speaking, we see Momonosuke and Kinemon in Wano as Momo remarks, "So you were a pirate, Joy Boy," and we jump to a jail cell at the G4 Naval Base where Damaro Black, honestly, if he had not written his name, I would not have known it because we know him more colloquially as the former fake Luffy, is proclaiming that he could easily beat Joy Toy, being corrected to Joy Boy because he didn't even know who he was actually saying, with his whole crew dressed up now, not as fake Luffy, but as the Kid Pirates.
That shit actually had me like, I think it's rare that I'll actually break out and laugh out loud, but that shit took me. I thought that was hilarious when we see them in prison and they're like the fake kid pirates this time, and I was like, man, you guys are really just riding on everyone's coattails.
But it reminded me, it made me think of a term we all know and love, which is like haters gonna hate. And like this dude is like, I don't know if hating is the right term, but he is kind of hating, and he's just like taking advantage of every pirate who seems strong and then just kind of like disappears. I mean, Kid obviously just got like completely wrecked by Shanks. And this dude is just an opportunist to continue this bad faith acting, trying to act like he's strong something, even though
Hey,
we all know this dude is weak.
don't get too into that because you might be infringing on my award a little bit. So, we're gonna just move on. We don't need to get
I
to
All right, we're gonna hold off.
because
We're
we're
not gonna
like this
spoil.
right
We're not gonna spoil things from now on. We're not gonna
we're
spoil
like
things
we're
from
like
now
this
on.
right now, Jordan. We're on the same page with this guy.
So we'll move on. So just to make sure Abraham still has award to give, but from that point, Vegapunk says the few Poneglyphs that he's read tell an unbelievable history about a great war in a distant past. He continues, during that period, Joy Boy faced an enemy, the organization, and now known as the World Government. Back then, they were merely the Allied Powers, a temporary coalition consisting of 20 separate kingdoms. And as the Marines listen along in confusion, like, wait, that's us? Luffy and Dory run frantically to escape from Warkery, and Mars walks through the lab, knocking out the Denden Mushi with what seems to be Conqueror's Haki.
So I thought this was actually a pretty significant revelation, and it's still, maybe there's maybe a little bit of ambiguity about whether or not it's I think it's pretty clear that it's Conqueror's Haki. And the reason I thought this was significant was actually something that our friend Samir brought up to us, where Conqueror's Haki is all about, I mean, Haki in general is about your will, right? But Conqueror's Haki especially is about kind of asserting your will and dominance almost over like another, right? And there's been a lot of speculation, what are the Gorosei? Are they like creations of Emu? Are they, individual beings themselves? And seeing them have Conqueror's Haki makes me feel like they have to be their own individuals, because how else would they have, a willpower of like their own if not?
That does seem that it has to be the case. And that said, like having them feel like some kind of fragment or some kind of like, I could still see them being some kind of. Okay, I guess I'm totally contradicting myself, being like, it does make sense that they have to be on their own, but I'm like, they could be still like some kind of split consciousness, but not necessarily in, but that split consciousness is all able to use Haki. I think that what's really interesting to me about this is the idea, as we learn more about the world and are learning about this great technologically advanced society, I'm thinking a lot about what their powers mean compared to the rest of the world. And when we see how worried people like Sengoku are as soon as someone like Luffy demonstrates this power, to me, it begins to feel like there's going to be some real significance to the fact that basically everyone from this category, the Elder Stars, can actually do this. And they're really trying hard to make sure that no one from the rest of the world is able to do this thing. Is there a reason for that?
Well, I mean, I think the reason for that is that the ultimate level of combat, like we learned on Wano, right, involves advanced Conqueror's Haki usage, right? So I think it's more of a matter of, one, people who have Conqueror's Haki have just that strength of will to be able to accomplish whatever it is they want to accomplish, right? It's kind of like that whole thing about like an indomitable spirit. But also, I think it just indicates the, like, I guess, I don't know, a fighting potential is the right way to think of it. Like, Luffy, even with Gear 5, I don't think he's throwing hands with Kaido if he doesn't have advanced Conqueror's Haki, right? He's not going to be able to damage him, in my opinion. So I think it's a combination of both of those things.
That's true. I still kind of wonder, as we learn more about the science of the world, if there's something to the power beyond just the power to be a really strong combatant. I think that where I'm going with this, obviously it makes someone strong, but like, is there something that having this kind of power can unlock about some kind of technology that we don't understand? Is it representative of being some kind of, like, a descendant of some kind of group? You know, I think a while ago in one of our earlier episodes, we talked about a theory in which everyone's kind of like part of some group of people, like the D clan are all the descendants of something, and they've like spread out and they've had their certain amount of like power or whatever dispersed. But I think as we learn more about inherited will, I'm going to talk a little bit more about this as we get through different parts of the chapter, and we talk about kind of like the Great War. But as we learn more about inherited will, I kind of start to wonder if this, you know, in what ways willpower has been scientifically codified.
Yeah, so I think what maybe you're getting at is stuff like we see the ancient robot being powered by
something related to
Gear 5 and Luffy, right?
Possibly. That's a great example.
I don't expect that to get that from Haki. I think, I do understand what you're saying, but at the end of the day, I think the reason why someone like Sengoku can be like, oh my god, this kid, this rookie has Conqueror's Haki, we need to wipe him out, is because they can see the potential of this person, right? It's not just a fighting potential, but someone like Dragon, right? Someone like me would never be a revolutionary because I'd be like, man, I'm too lazy to actually try and go out there and change the world. Exactly. Right? You need to be a certain kind of person to have the spirit to, no matter what happens to you, go out there and accomplish your goal. And I think, one, that's all Conqueror's Haki users. And then also you need to have the strength to be able to do it, which is also related. So that's why I think it's important. But I'm not going to deny that what you said could, we might learn something like that related to the future.
Well, one thing that we definitely know happened is those snails got knocked out. But it wasn't enough to actually stop the broadcast. Vegapunk continues, it could be assumed that an alliance was the only feasible way to oppose the formidable faction to which Joy Boy belonged. I'm afraid the cause of the conflict still eludes me, so I do not presume to judge the morality of the combatants. I can, however, say this was a clash of two opposing ideologies. I mentioned earlier that Joy Boy was born into a fantastical civilization, one so advanced that it is hard to believe it existed over 900 years ago. The weapons that existed during the century-long struggle are far beyond modern science, and therein lies our problem. And I'm not going to lie, I kind of added this section. I meant to bring it up with you when we were doing the pre-show. I added the section I was doing I was creating the chapter reads. But this is really interesting for me. Yeah. I meant to bring it up. I meant to bring it up, and then I forgot. And then you brought up the other part that I added, and then we didn't even, you know. but this was really interesting to me for two reasons. One is that I keep saying that I believe there's going to be some complexity to the decisions that the world government made, and I have to wonder what the source of this conflict was, however many hundreds of years ago, and how it's going to manifest between the ideologies and characters we have in the modern day. And I think the second kind of question I have is, what does Vegapunk mean by therein lies our problem? To me, this signals that in understanding the scientific implications of this fantastical civilization might actually affect what we think about that ancient conflict between Joy Boy and the world government and the morality of it. Curious what you think, Abraham.
Yeah, so for me, what I interpreted from "And Therein Lies Our Problems" is he's talking about how technologically advanced these weapons are, right? How even by today's standards, they far exceed what could be created and thought of today. And I think the idea is just that the use of these, and we're going to get into later, but how he says, you know, the Great War is continuing to this day. But I think he's just alluding to the fact that these weapons, these advanced weapons that were created way back when, have been used in the past to shape the world and will be used in the future to shape the world.
So when I look at Vegapunk's paragraph here, like, I understand how you can get to that conclusion. When I look at his paragraph here, I'm seeing him speak about a lot more than just the end of the world, right? He's talking about how he can't understand the source of the conflict between these two parties. He's saying, I can't judge right from wrong because I'm not even able to understand it well enough. The difference between these ideologies and the lack of technology is what's making it difficult. Now, I know I've brought up the idea that maybe there was some kind of like very difficult decision that came from the rise of technology, that kind of thing. And certainly the story is being set up such that Joy Boy feels like he's going to end up being the good guy. But I think in this phrase, what Vegapunk is saying is we don't have the technology to even be able to understand right from wrong. And what kind of scientific implications does that have? Like, what could we learn that will make us think differently?
Yeah, so I kind of think of those two things as separate issues, right? I think he's pointing out that there's this this advanced scientific development and technology and weaponry and all that other stuff is separate from the idea that what is right and wrong and what these different ideologies are two separate issues, right? I think the reason why he's being a little ambiguous about who is on the right side of history, quote unquote, is because, like he says, he doesn't have access to all of the poneglyphs. He hasn't become versed in all of the complete history of the world, right? And so it's almost like if you have like a biased reading of whatever, like you only read one tiny tidbit of history, right? Can you really ever have like, you can't really definitively say who was right and who was wrong. And I think that's what he's alluding to when he's like, I know that there was some kind of ideological difference, but I don't know who was on the right side of this, right? There's moral ambiguity here because he's just not aware of that. I think the whole thing about the scientific issues and that leading to current day problems and therein lies our problems, in my opinion, is due to how this advanced technology may be used to shape the world in a bad way, in like with the flooding in the future. But
go ahead. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. What I want to ask you is what you think those differing ideologies were. Do you have any ideas for what you think they were?
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things that it would have been cool if I like thought more about that on the show, but I think that before the show, but I think that one thing that comes up to me that's interesting is about like technological advancement versus saying, hey, this technology also comes with great dangers and we should go with something safer. I think there's something about freedom versus structure where there's some, like, I really believe in the beauty of structure, right? Like, you talk about my life and how I, you know, my running, even like when I play video games, like, I'm playing Persona 5 and I'm like, man, I really love grinding. That's like kind of exactly the same as how I love running, where I'm just doing this thing and getting up every day. And I'm just like trying to get like whatever percentage of the spending like 10 hours trying to fuse Persona that I don't even like need to do to get like a higher completionist ranking, right? Yeah. I'm like, that's like exactly how I approach running. It's so, like, there's some real belief in like structure being a good thing, but obviously something where the world government take that to a certain level is can be bad. And I think one other idea that sort of comes to me is like when you have, you know, I think we talked about like Full Metal Alchemist as an example of, you know, it's like if you could fuse everyone together in a philosopher's stone or a mother flame or something like that, you know, if I just had to like make something up, Is that like an ethical use of things of being able to sacrifice that many people for the good of everyone else or for the ability to live of people who are close to you? Like those are the kinds of things that come up for me. I'm curious if any of that resonates with you.
Yeah, that stuff you said about the Philosopher's Stone, I think is going to be similar to what I'm imagining in my head. I think a better analogy for what I'm thinking is the ending of Attack on Titan, where you find out about, like, again, the Marleyans and the Eldians, and Eren gets to a point where he's just like, you know what? I'm just going to protect the people I care about, and and if the rest of the world has to, like, burn and die in order for the people
Literally.
that I care about, these this small purport, then, so be it. And he creates the rumble, right? I don't know if this is, if there does end up being some kind of moral ambiguity for the world government, which, like I said last week, I don't really think there will be, but if there is, I could see it being something like that, where they're like, hey, we want we are all about promoting human life, quote unquote, right? We want to be the ones who are on top at the end of the day. And if that comes at the cost of all these other species in the world, then so be it, right?
I think that makes a lot of sense, and I think that, I think if there's a way that seeing everyone put into a mother flame is a way of making it more positive, and like the rumbling is a way of making it more negative. But really, it's sort of like a similar theory, and it could be really interesting to see what that actually looks like. I mean, who knows? Odo could just be an environmentalist, right? And it's like, hey, we need to kill off people in the world to. I mean, the world flooding is like a very environmentalist type of concern, so it'd be interesting to see. But as we return to the chapter, we go to the lava stratum. Edison, seemingly in his deathbed, tells Susie to hightail it out of Egghead while she remarks that with Stella gone, she has no purpose and nothing else to live for. While Jinbei, Zoro, Nami, and Bonnie head for the shore, Venus Juro thinks to himself, sense the living voices before lopping off the mast of the giant's ship. There's some really interesting pieces of Venus Juro's power here. We see some manifestation of observation haki, where he like remarks later, there are too many life forms up here. I know we've talked a little bit about the Elder Star's power, so that's kind of in line with their use of haki. And more interestingly, I want to point out that the flame on his back looks a little bit, or a lot, I would say, like the flames around Luffy in his Nika form. And I think there's really something interesting about like if Luffy is turning into this ancient sun god or this ancient kind of life form. Do those flames have something to do with what it means to be part of this like ancient conflict? Like, what do they have to do with what do they have to do with powers in our world today and powers in the ancient world?
Yeah, I gotta be honest. I think they just look like flames to me.
Bro, it's a ring of flames like going from like shoulder to shoulder, like
Are
behind
you talking
them.
okay? Oh, you're talking about the black one, not the ones on, like, his horse on his body, but, like, the ones around his
No,
neck.
no, no. Yeah. Like that ring of flames. This is like going around
Okay.
behind him.
But doesn't that also, like, I feel like Lucci, when he had his awakened zone or whatever, also was drawn with like flames kind of like that around his body too, right? It's been a while, maybe I'm misremembering, but
There definitely is some sense that awakened zones, which Luffy is obviously, have some kind of that. But I think what when we as we start learning more about technology, as we start learning more about things like inherited will, right? Like when we know these things came from a technologically advanced society,
sure.
man, I almost feel like I'm gonna end up spoiling what we're gonna talk about in the last segment with the ongoing war. But it's not that things come from an advanced technology, like. To me, it's like that's passed down. Like these zone fruits are wills that are passed down. Like this Nika fruit is a way to pass down, whether it's the ideology, whatever, in resistance to the world government. And so seeing all of these things, to me, it feels like a pretty significant sense of being able to get an understanding of what powers, like what kind. Like the Seraphim also have these kinds of things. We know the Lunarians also have, like, the flames don't look exactly the same with the Lunarians. And we know the Mother Flame is a thing. So to me, this feels very relevant to understanding what the nature of, like, powers versus technology, the nature of, like, what the Mother Flame and how Lunarians, how these things are power. And I think there's going to be some kind of link that we get that really helps us understand where Audis comes from and exactly what types of beings the Elder Stars are.
Yeah, so when I, the reason I think I have a hard time drawing an analogy between Venus Juro and the flames that we see on his character and what we see on Nika is because the two of Nika represents like the antithesis of whatever the world government is, whatever the world government's will is, ideology is, however you want to put it.
His are white, his are white, theirs are black, you know?
it would feel, I get it. I get what you're saying, that maybe there's some ancient power, whatever, that these Gorosei and Nika are using, but I'm just, I don't think I can get on board with it. It's almost like, yeah, they're just polar opposites of one another, right? So I expect, like, you know, the whatever it is that powers, let's say, this giant robot, and how that's related to like the Nika fruit and Luffy, to say that there's these flames that are just I think Oda is just drawing flames, to be honest. It's kind of like how you have a problem with people saying Venus Juro is going to fight Zoro because he's a swordsman. I feel like there's a lot of flames that are going to end up quote unquote looking like the flames on Nika or the mother flame, because there's only so many ways you can draw a flame. And to just be like, you know, there's a connection here because they look similar. Yeah, they look similar because they're both flames, right?
I'll jump in here really quick.
Yeah.
So Lucci, Saturn, and Venus Juro all have the black scarf, which I think is a sign of an awakened Zoan. Luffy and Yamato, actually, when they're in their Zoan forms, have white scarves. So I don't know what you think about that.
Maybe, I mean, to me, that makes it seem like maybe that's Oda's way of depicting one side of the, he's like depicting the quote unquote good characters with these white flames and the quote unquote bad characters with these black flames. But I don't know if that's
it's almost as if some of them were inherited wills passed down by some bad people, and some of them were inherited wills passed down by some good people. But you know,
who did Yamato inherit her?
Oda, right?
She never. Sorry, I don't even. I think Yamato goes by he, him. He never met Odin.
Yamato goes by Yamato, bro.
No, okay, whatever. I'm talking pronouns. I'm not talking about their name.
Hey, so some people go no pronouns, bro.
Yeah,
you know?
Okay, first of all, yeah, Yamato read Odin's logbook and was just like it's not like Yamato ever met like Odin.
Right, but it's like Luffy never met Nika, and Luffy, you could say, is like taking on the will of Shanks. But what I'm suggesting is that the fruit itself has some kind of personality. But I want to save some of this for later in the discussion because I think it's related to the part about the giant war.
I just want to say I disagree with that, especially when you think about stuff like that. I can get it with the Nika Nika stuff and the Gorosei stuff, but when you start including Yamato and Lucci, I feel like those fruits are very tangential to this whole conversation. But
bro, how is this dude, like, I'm trying to get on with the next section of the chapter, and this dude, and say I'm going to come back to this later, and this dude says, I disagree.
You took just as long to point that out as I took to say what I said, you know?
As Venus Juro cuts the lava stratum entirely in half, seemingly freeing the Seraphim and Cyberpole agents, we see the revolutionaries in Sabo, Nami's sister Nojiko and Genzo, Dalton and Kureha, Vivi, Wapo and Morgans, and even Miss All Sunday, a personal favorite of mine, I just think she's a hilarious character, reacting to the next piece of Vegapunk's reveal in this chapter. He remarks that the Void Century ended with Joy Boy's defeat, and that the grand consequences of this defeat leave us with the One Piece world we know today, in which people grow up isolated on islands in which they only know their own culture. This is because 1,000 years ago, a cataclysmic ecological disaster occurred that caused sea levels to rise by 200 meters.
Yeah, I thought a couple things. One, I want to shout out Mr. Morge. who is the
Oh,
GOAT.
you want to shout out Mr. Morch? Okay, yeah,
I'm
that's
going to
great.
shout him
Yeah,
out
yeah.
real quick
Oh,
because
just no, yeah, just shout out Mr. Morch. No, go ahead,
he
shout out Mr.
predicted
Morch.
this
That's
9 months ago. You know, he predicted this 9 months ago,
great.
and we got to give him his flowers because this was not an obvious prediction when he put out a video that, you know, the One Piece world is underwater. So, you know, shout out to the GOAT, Mr. Morch. But in terms of this 200 meters things, what I want to say is we talked in, I don't remember what chapter discussion it was. It was maybe a month or two ago about how this imminent flooding could maybe possibly be related to the natural order of the world, geology, all that other stuff, right?
Right,
And
right.
I think my point when we talked about that was we have islands like Water Seven that are actively flooding, and we see that this is an active issue that they deal with, but other islands in the world don't deal with that issue. They're not actively being flooded right now. So if there was an event in the past that, you know, triggered a bunch of flooding, that, or sorry, I think I would say if there's an event in the future like that would trigger imminent flooding, then there would have to be some kind of triggering event to cause all of that, right? And it seems like Vegapunk is ex saying exactly that in this chapter, right? He's saying this wasn't related to, what does he say? He says, I studied ecology, geology, all these other sciences. This was not related to anything natural. There was some artificial creation that led to this flooding, right? Which is
I
basically
really
what I was
this
saying.
is, bro, bro, you're gonna drive me nuts. You're gonna drive me. I need someone to like I don't know if Alex like has understood what I've been saying. Like when I talk about the nature of the world, it does not, I've said this like five times, it does not mean that necessarily the flood itself is natural. It
Correct.
means that it's something that will help us understand,
Right.
like, well, I would say the nature of the One Piece world, but clearly that's a confusing term. It's something that will help us understand things that we took for granted about how the One Piece world is, in ways that are different from how we understood it before, right?
Jordan, I wasn't, I want to, I think you need to get out of your feelings a little bit because I never said that what you were saying was wrong. I said that what I was bringing up about this flooding not being, I said I was right. I said nothing about you
Hey,
being wrong.
okay. I don't know,
And
man. Hey,
I don't know why
listen.
you took like some kind of personal, you're like,
Hey,
I'm so frustrated with you.
listen.
No, all I said,
Use the word nature. You use the word nature, okay? Use the word nature.
he uses it in this
Hey,
chapter.
you've
He
been
uses it in this
hey,
chapter.
you yeah. You were posting on Discord crazy 3 weeks ago. You were posting on Discord crazy 3 weeks ago. But hey, I will let you go. I'll let you go. I'll let you continue. You were right. You were right that it was an
Yeah.
event that is caused by a trigger, having to do with something that the world government did.
Exactly. That's all I'm saying. Don't worry. I'm not talking about what you may or may not have said. Don't worry about
That's true. Yeah.
that.
It's just yeah. Nonetheless, because we're gonna get into the whole man-made calamity a little bit in the next section anyway, but for me, what this panel really brought up is a question about like how natural versus scientific a lot of the world is. I know we talked the other day in some of the pre-show about how, yeah, there was a sea before and maybe sea kings could have been there, but first of all, these sea kings are crazy. They are not normal. These sea kings are super, like, they're ridiculously large beasts. Beyond that, it seems really unnatural that, sea levels just rise, so they're everywhere, but all the sea kings just kind of stay in these two paths just outside of the Grand Line. They say, we're all just going to live in these two places.
In the
And
Calm Belt, you mean?
finally, yeah, the Calm Belt, exactly, like these two belts that are just like outside of the Grand Line. I didn't know, lines I could have said. I don't know. I didn't know what to say. But yeah, the Calm Belt is like a
Okay.
particularly weird thing for them to decide just,
Yeah.
hey, we're just going to live there. And additionally, we know the Sea Kings are related to the ancient weapon Poseidon, which means that we now know that Poseidon is a piece of technological advancement. To me, this feels like they are some sort of artificial technology that may not have existed naturally in the sea. Am I crazy here? That's what
So
200 meters brought up
I
for
want,
me.
yeah, I'm gonna ask you to explain that artificial technology again in a sec, but I want to just say something about the Sea Kings before you say that. While the Sea Kings live in the Calm Belt, obviously, I don't think they're just restricted to the Calm Belt. For example, we see when we go down to Fishman Island, which is not in the Calm Belt, right? There are Sea Kings all over the place, right? I think the issue with the Calm Belt is that there are no winds or any ability to like power your ship through them. So you're kind of stuck in this Sea King nest. But Sea Kings do exist outside of the Calm Belt.
Okay, yeah, that actually does make sense. So,
Yeah.
second
But
point.
yeah, so can you explain what you mean about ancient technology related to the sea?
Well, we know that Poseidon's an ancient weapon, right?
Right.
And we know that the ancient weapons are an advanced technology, right?
I guess, I mean, you could call Poseidon technology, but I mean, she's also a person. I don't know if I'd
Yeah,
like.
but that's my whole point, is when we talk about trying to understand the nature of the One Piece world, we're talking about trying to understand different things, like, is Poseidon just a person, or is there some important technological aspect to what being a mermaid baby, like whatever, who can actually control these sea kings is? Because what we are learning through this reveal is that the ancient weapons are technology. That is a key part of Vegapunk's reveal, is there's an advanced technology that we, with our current understanding of the world, or at least the people living in the One Piece world, cannot or would not be able to understand.
Yeah. So
And so
I
that
want to
means
say,
that Poseidon, being one of those weapons,
yeah.
is a technology beyond something that we're able to understand.
I will say that I don't think I would not call Poseidon a technology, and I don't necessarily think that the all-powerful technologies that Vegapunk is referring to are necessarily the ancient weapons. People have speculated that the thing that Emu used to destroy Lelouchia was Uranus, but we don't actually like that's never been confirmed, right? Uranus could be it. I think it's very likely that it is Uranus, but we're still waiting for that kind of confirmation. It would seem weird that maybe not weird that the world government has that ancient weapon, but not the other ones.
Wait, so when Vegapunk says the weapons that existed during the century-long struggle are far beyond modern science, you do not think he's referring to the ancient weapons?
No, I'm talking about like, well, the weapons are one thing, but you're talking about like technology and stuff like that. Like, I wouldn't call the Poseidon a technology because she's a person with the power to control the Sea Kings, right? That is that like that doesn't fall under the
I'm
umbrella
saying,
of a
why
technology.
does she have that power?
I don't say why can Momo control Zunisha,
Because
right?
what I'm suggesting is that there might be some kind of, and it might not be like technology the way we think about it in the real world today, but like some kind of like One Piece technology, right? That actually explains that. That this society way in the future, or way in the past, that was super advanced, had created the kind of technology that makes that possible.
Do you guys see any parallels between Poseidon and the
The Seraphim, the Kumas, the Kumas, right?
No. Well, I was going to say Lilith controls the sea beast weapons that are created by Vegapunk. It feels like a more advanced instance of that with Poseidon.
Yeah,
Yes,
yeah, no, that exact thing. Yeah, this the Pacifista are another example, but yeah, I agree. It's a more advanced
so
example of that.
th those are examples of like actual technology, right?
Bro, but that is my
Like
whole point. That is my whole point, is
okay, but
Vegapunk, what he is
okay,
saying is
Jordan.
there's technology beyond our wildest imaginations that existed in the past. And these ancient weapons are beyond that technology. When you say these are examples of actual technology, I'm saying it could be possible that these are examples of that.
Okay, now I need you to stop talking for a second because you keep on interrupting me now when I'm trying to explain my point D. Okay, we know that part of the reason why the Roger Pirates were too early was because the Mermaid Princess was not born yet, right? She wasn't some kind of technology that was created in order to, perform the role of the ancient weapon Poseidon. She was a mermaid princess that was, I guess you could say, was prophesized to be born and prophesized to be the ancient weapon Poseidon. As to how she controls that ancient weapon, I think it's going to be something related to like the voice of all things, willpower, hot, like haki, that kind of stuff. But that is not technology, right? The reason why Momo controls Zunisha and can communicate with Zunisha is not like, again, Momo is a regular human boy. Like he's not any different from someone like Hiyori, right? He just ha like in terms of like who he is like, he's not like some prod, like Sanji is not technically not just human, right? He's the product of scientific experimentation. We know that wasn't the case for someone like Momonosuke. We know that wasn't the case for someone like Shirahoshi. And so while, yes, we're going to learn more about what it is that enables Momo to control Zunisha, what it is that enables Poseidon to control the sea beasts, I don't know how you can label that power as a quote unquote technology. Like, that would have to be the loosest step. What is your definition of technology? If that is, if y maybe that's what I should ask you. What's your definition of technology? Because I feel like this is going to end up being the loosest definition of technology that I've ever heard.
The point is not so much that it's not so much about the like definition of technology. It's about the expansive view of what it's about an expansive view of what the ancient kingdom might have accomplished in its ability to create technology, right? And
You
I
just said it's
think
not about technology, and then you just said it's about the expansive view of what the ancient kingdom would have been able to create with respect to technology. But you like.
As in, the ancient kingdom has been able to create stuff that is so far beyond the imagination of our characters and us to this point as One Piece readers, that there could be something that is technological or is a result of technological advancement that explains all of those things that you're talking about.
Okay, I think that this is why I'm trying to get you down on like sub. You know how whenever you have a debate, I'm sure you, I don't know if you did debate club or whatever when you were a kid, to like define the terms of the debate. You start every debate by defining whatever the terms of the debate are. And I feel like we're not all that different from what we like. There clearly is some power that is related to how Shirahoshi is able to control these sea beasts, or how Momo can control Zunisha, that we don't understand and that will be explained to us in the future. I guess my gripe is that you're labeling it, it seems like you're labeling it as technology to fit under Vegapunk's, fit into what the ideas you have and what Vegapunk is saying in his speech. When I'm saying that by no definition of technology that I've ever heard, would it make sense to label Shirahoshi and her powers as being technologically related, or Momo and his powers as being technologically related? Because we don't actually differ all that much outside of you labeling it as technology.
I'll say that I think that's the key to what I actually like, what I'm beginning to take from Vegapunk's reveal. But I want to get onto the last segment of it, and I think some of that will be clear. I don't want to spend too much time on. We've gotten some spoilers for the last segment because I've ended up getting into that as a result of like three other conversations, which that's on me. It's on me for not realizing I was going to do that when I like made the chapter. But anyway, in the last couple pages, we see Vivi, Morgans, and Wapol begrudgingly listening as Vegapunk proclaims the flood that sank the One Piece world was a man-made calamity, and that the disaster of 800 years ago was caused by the technology of the ancient weapons capable of sinking the world, and that because the same firepower still exists, waiting to be used again, the great war that ravaged the world during the Void Century is still ongoing.
Yeah, so this is related to what I said earlier, right? Where I think, and what Vegapunk's line about, and therein too lies the problem, is what he ends up getting to at the end, right? Where there is still this, like you said, this ancient power that's going to be used in the future to destroy the world, right? It's an issue that the world government has their hands on this advanced tech that even Vegapunk is not able to recreate with all of his genius. That's kind of how I interpreted that. And I mean, I'm not shocked. I wasn't like, oh my God, we're still at war. Like, I feel like we as the readers knew that about the, like, we saw what happened to Lelouchia, right? To some degree. So, I don't know.
To me, what feels significant about this is as we learn about things like, so the for example, right, like Luffy being this guy who now looks just like Joy Boy, and clearly, you know, you learn about Zone Fruits inheriting their will. I think there's a difference between there's some kind of like ideological remnants of this war still going on, and the war itself is still going on. And so I look at it and say, like, characters like Blackbeard, Luffy, right? We talked about it a little bit earlier. What parts of this war are they representing? Luffy obviously is sort of the inheritor of Joy Boy's will. But again, when we talk about science, right? And we talk about, like, we know that modern day science can create devil fruits, but those devil fruits that get created are failures. Obviously, Smile being a thing that they end up creating, and it's not the perfect example of it. What I see this as being representative of is that devil fruits are a technology created by the ancient kingdom, or like by whoever the enemies of the world government are, to pass on the will of their fighters in this war. And so someone like Joy Boy, when that war is still ongoing, it's representative of his will being passed on in a much more concrete way in resistance. Yeah. To the world government, et cetera, so, you know, Blackbeard, et cetera, things like that.
I want to ask you a quick question related to that then, right? Because go someone like Luigi, who... No, no, no. I mean, it's related to that and related to...
I said, go for it, bro.
Oh, I thought you said, oh boy. I thought you said, oh boy.
No.
So Luigi obviously ate a devil fruit, right? And we talked just now about how the black shroud or whatever around his neck is black, and versus like being white for someone like Yamato and Luffy, right? If the will that a person inherit, if these devil fruits were creations by the ancient kingdom in order to kind of pass on the will of their quote-unquote fighters or whatever of their civilization to other people, why would Lucci, who ate, you know, one of these ancient kingdoms produced devil fruit, not have like a white shroud?
But to
like,
be fair, like it's Yamato. It's not to say only the ancient kingdom passed it down. It could be that the ancient kingdom passed it down, and also all of their enemies who also had access to this technology passed it down in their own way, right? And so like Lucci could be someone who's passed down through the Elder Stars version of it, like whatever the world government's okay. version. And Nika, for example, is once passed on from Joy Boy's faction. And like, who knows about like Blackbeard's or whatever his fruit is, that kind of thing.
Okay, I feel like that was a little bit of a loophole that you just created to fit Luigi in. Because me personally, the way I'm not off. I don't think you're necessarily wrong about this whole thing about the devil fruits being created by this ancient kingdom and their advanced technology. And we know, especially for zones, I don't know about for Logias and for Paramecias, but these zones have a will of their own. I'm on board with all of those ideas, but it was kind of like I said, with the reason I think Luigi has that black shroud versus a white shroud of someone like Yamato isn't because he has like some inherited will that is quote unquote evil or whatever, however you want to label it, that he's inherited. It's just because that's Oda's way of maybe depicting one side of this conflict versus the other. He's just like, I'm going to label these people that are on the Straw Hat side with maybe these white shrouds. And like, that makes more sense to me than maybe creating this little loophole that I feel like you did.
Yeah, bro. Labeling people that are on Joy Boy's side and labeling people that's on the world government side. Exactly. Exactly my point. Thank you. Now, Abraham, obviously, you know, we spent a long time in this chapter. It's a really dense one. And honestly, probably I didn't realize it's going to end up spoiling what I wanted to talk about in the last section for three sections. But I know you have, you know, in addition to some of the, you know, material pieces and theories that this brings up, you really felt like there was a deep theme in this that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, and I don't want to spend too long talking about it because we've been going on for a while. But Vegapunk's line about how the flooding that happened in the past caused all of these different races and civilizations to be isolated from one another and not experience any cultures outside of their own, I thought was actually a very significant panel in this series. I thought it was Oda's way of explaining maybe his philosophy to us about, or maybe his worldview to us, where it's like all of these people in the One Piece world and in real life, to be honest, we have more in common with one another than we do that sets us apart from one another, right? But it's almost like the ignorance of other people's culture leads to, I guess if you want to call it fear-mongering or stereotypes or whatever it is, right? Where, you know, the long arms have certain beliefs about the long legs, or the fishmen have beliefs about the human, and it's easier to keep people isolated and against one another when they don't truly understand one another, right? Whereas when you have this world where culture can be freely shared amongst one another, and you can, you know, truly have all of these different races and species and all these different things come together. I like you just have, I think that is Oda's idea of what life should be like, that people should make an effort to try and understand one another because we have more in common with one another than what sets us apart.
It's interesting because when, you know, you first brought this up, I was like, yeah, this like seems kind of important, but, you know, whatever, like the bigger thing has to do with the kind of inequality in the world. And as you started talking about the fishmen and the impressed with humans, you know, whether as people and how they see the elder stars, I think what came to mind for me is thinking about how what's important when you have this kind of world elite who's, I mean, literally floating around in the sky wearing freaking bubbles on their heads because they don't want to breathe the same air as the rest of us. They're really able to continue doing that by turning everyone on each other and saying, oh, the giants are going to hate these people and the fishmen are going to hate humans and this, yeah, and that. Oh, I mean, where do the fishmen come from? That's a whole other question. We can get to that whole thing later because I have questions about that too. But, you know, the way they're able to create their, continue to maintain their power and keep this deeply unequal world that we're all living in is through keeping everyone else from banding together and keeping everyone else from realizing that actually we do all have similarities. I shouldn't be mad at humans or fishmen. I should be mad at the celestial dragons who are out here oppressing all of us. And I think that really resonates with me as
for sort
of like a deeper explanation to these themes of One Piece.
And you know, just to tie it to real life quickly, Samir said something to me like on the drive here when I was talking about this to him, where I think it was, I don't know if it was Lyndon Johnson or some former president who was like, if you could convince the poorest white man that he is in a better social standing than the richest black man, then,
right,
you know, you can create this kind of conflict and inequality where these people, like, you know, like, yeah, I don't have much, but at least I have more than, I don't know. I think it's.
Yeah. I mean, Alex, can you find that quote? Cause it's a really good one.
Yeah. Let me pull that.
Yeah. Yeah, but you get what I'm saying. Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, that's exactly what I'm thinking when you bring it up. Right. That is a really good quote. I know the quote. I don't, you know it by heart. Lyndon Johnson sounds right.
Like that could be right. One of those presidents, right?
But I think that's definitely the kind of thing that we're getting at. And I'll say that, you know, I was reading some of my old volumes yesterday. Maybe it was volume like 14 or something. It was in Little Garden. And you actually, in that volume there, I wish I would have written it down because I knew we were going to talk about this. So kind of dumb of me not to. But Oda, even back then, is talking about how a lot of people, because it's so difficult to get out of the world, are stuck kind of like trapped in a cage and like don't understand anything beyond them. It was Dory and Bragi, I believe, who were talking to the crew about, you know, what it's going to be like to go to Elbaf, for example, or like, hey, you know, you should get out of the place you are and really explore. And so to me, just even in terms of what it means to be a pirate and why that's something that's a noble thing in the world of One Piece, it's not about pillaging, obviously. It's not just about freedom, but it's also about you're able to go places and see things, and there's something really noble and beautiful about that. Not to mention, maybe that's even something about this initial conflict we're talking about, that there's something about wanting to be connected to other people and connectedness and like exploration of different cultures and embracing of difference between people rather than isolation.
Yeah. I think Alex got the quote. You want to read it for us?
Yeah, you nailed the first half. It goes, if you can convince the lowest white man he's better than the best colored man, he won't notice you're picking his pocket. Hell, give him somebody to look down on and he'll empty his pockets for you.
Yeah.
And is it Lyndon Johnson?
Lyndon B. Johnson.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was a small panel that for me was very, very meaningful and easy to just skip and not even think about.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I did. So I'll let you know the first time I read it. I'll let you know what panel. If I go back and read that, I'll let you know where he actually brings it up for the first time in Little Garden too. So, let you know how the theme continues through the whole thing. So that's what we got for the chapter. We did a whole lot. We got through the themes. Come back next week for our chapter 1116 review, just because we actually finally don't have a break week to week this time. But now it's time to jump into awards show, where we give awards to noteworthy moments you might have missed. Abraham, I know we heard a little bit about it, but what's your award this week?
My award is the Preying on Your Downfall award, and it goes to Damallo Black, because every single time one of these, superstar pirates, whether it be the Straw Hats getting wrecked on Sabaody or Kid getting wrecked on Elbaf, this man comes that we then the very next thing we see is this guy
Bro,
trying to, just cop their whole style, right?
an absolute opportunist.
He exactly. Maybe I should have called it the Opportunist Award, but this is just his. This is just the DeMelo Black playbook at this point.
Yeah, man, that dude sucks, bro. We already hated on him earlier in this episode, but that dude sucks. I'm gonna hate on him even more for being the hater that he is. The award I got this week is the I Still Love You award, because I just love Long Ring Long Land. And like, we got to see Tonta last time, and my guy Foxy. I don't even love Foxy that much, but that arc is just
It's
hilarious, and I'm glad we
so
got to see
great. You get like, the Davy Back fight and the Foxy Pirates and all this great
it.
stuff.
Man,
It's
why
such
do
a
I
great
keep doing this to myself,
moment.
man? Why
Yeah.
do I keep doing this to myself?
It's
I
a
hated who I
phenomenal arc.
love.
You meet Aokiji, all of that stuff.
Yeah, I love all that stuff so much, except I keep giving you opportunities to say that we're gonna have a debut back fight on Elbaf, and man, I'm gonna be in trouble if we do, but I just don't think we
All
are. So
right.
we've got a lot
Yeah.
to love this chapter with some of the densest content we've seen in One Piece, probably the biggest reveal about the nature of the One Piece world and the history of the series, which is still ongoing. And finally, we don't have a break in between chapters. So, Abraham, what do you think Oda has in store for us in 1116?
Yeah, I was thinking about this, and what, man. What I think we're going to end up getting in the next chapter is the Seraphim joining. Like, it was a low-key thing that I don't even think we really talked about in our recap, but the Seraphim, I think, were freed when Venus Juro sliced open the Labostratum, and having them jump in the fight and mess things up for, like, the Straw Hats already have their hands full with the Gorosei, so I think they're the freeing of the Seraphim is going to end up just throwing a whole new wrench into this conflict.
That does feel, it definitely doesn't feel insignificant, right? And it's really interesting to imagine what actually might happen with all their different personalities and things like that. Just because, we know Hancock's kind of on their side, who even knows about Jinbei. And it seems like we're about to get out of here, so I wonder what actually might, it seems like it'll be really interesting to see what actually happens. You already know what my prediction is going to be. You already know what my prediction. E
Tell me again.
16, bro. Emu. We saw Emu hanging out at the end of the last chapter, and I think we're gonna see a li I don't know if we're gonna actually get the Emu reveal, because that would be pretty crazy, but I feel like there just has to be some kind of important thing about Emu in the 16 chapter. 16 holy bullets, the big old thing that everyone thinks is Uranus, 16 lasers, Emu.
I have a quick question about that though. If we don't see Emu in 1116, are we gonna is that gonna change? We're gonna see Emu in like 1161 or something like that? Is there like
Yeah,
some other permutation? I'm
see,
just curious if we don't see him next chapter.
man, anytime Abraham says I have a question for you, I like my butthole tightens right up. I think it is not beyond me to suggest that in 1161 I might say a similar thing. It would not be in any other chapter, but it is not beyond me to suggest that I might do something like that.
Okay,
to
cool.
be
I
clear.
just wanted to know. I was just for my own sake. All right. Jordan, you know what time it is. It's
What
time
time
for
is
One
it?
Piece. It's time for One Piece Would You Rather, our newest segment where we answer hypotheticals as if we're in the One Piece world. Alex, what do you have for us this week?
Yeah, this one is related to One Piece, but it's not as if you were in the world, but we're all lovers and consumers of One Piece. And I'm curious if you had the option, prior to the One Piece being revealed, for you to die or for Oda to die, which would you prefer?
Jordan, do you want to go first or do you want me to go
Bro, you
first?
already started speaking. It's you.
Okay. I think this is an easy question. I think I clearly would rather have Oda die than myself. There's not even close. For a number of reasons. For one, if I die, I'm never gonna find out the ending of One Piece, right? Because I'm dead.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, that's
Two,
true.
if Oda dies, apparently he has all of these like well-written notes and other people who he set up to finish telling the story for him anyways. So like I would be sad. It would really disappoint me. And maybe a part of me would question if this is really the ending that Oda planned, if someone else had to finish the story. But at the end of the day, I would get to finish the story. So
It could be a Game of Thrones.
it's like
But
I trust Oda's
if,
notes.
but I was gonna say though, because if you die, like I'm just saying, let's say you die at a normal time, right? Like you die, you get old and die. Like when I heard this question, I was like, oh, I'm gonna get old and die. And that means One Piece has just been going for my entire life. Like I just wasn't even thinking about it, it means I die soon. I was like, oh, it means I die when I'm 90. And One Piece has been going that whole time. And
Nah.
I was like, you know, I don't think, like, I love having had One Piece for this long. And I don't think I need One Piece all the way until I'm 90, because I feel like at that point it would end up jumping the shark and it would end up getting worse. And so in the situation where I die at a normal age, I would like Oda to die first.
I would imagine that you would
Wait,
I
wait,
took
no.
the
No,
situation.
I would like to die. Wait.
Yeah.
Wait.
You're saying
Nah.
you would die
Whatever. I
first?
want it to stop before I'm dead. I want to stop before I'm dead.
Okay, so you want Oda to
Yeah,
die first then.
sure. Yeah,
Yeah.
whatever. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, I feel like we the implicit assumption is that, you know, the story is gonna end in sometime like maybe 7 years, 8 years, however, whatever the ballpark is, right? Not that it's gonna go on for like another 60 years.
Correct. Yeah,
Yeah.
I completely agree. But if that happened, I think it would be a bad thing. Once again, I am really looking forward to all the like side One Piece content that we end up getting that's about like, you know, people doing a retelling of the stories. We already had Aces. The fact that there's no Naoki or Usopp Blackbeard, I'm gonna bring up every time, and I'm like incredibly sad that that's probably not gonna happen. But like that is the stuff I'm like looking forward to. One Piece needs to end before I die.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a little selfish because I did pick this up from a post that I saw just a little while ago, and I'll say that there was extreme solidarity in the comments. Everyone was saying, "Hey, I'll go for my fellow One Piece readers so that they get the story that they deserve."
I feel like if you turn this into like, would you push your friend off a cliff if you have to choose between like your friend and Oda? That would make it like a harder question to answer.
Okay, well, we can do that next week maybe. I just like that, like I heard this question and I was like, well, I'm dying when I'm 90, so
Unless you get hit by like a bus or
yeah,
something
I
like
got hit by a car on my bike the other day. It was actually pretty crazy. I ended up completely okay, but it was nuts. Yeah. But you know, we don't want to, it's I think we did enough on the chapter now. I think it's time to jump into some of the arts and culture. You know, we might have a little bit about people getting hit by cars later on in this segment. But Alex, what do we have first today?
Yeah, we've got some crazy news out of Japan. Toru Furuya, I'm butchering his name. Toru
Furuya.
Furuya, the voice actor for Sabo in One Piece, has been reported to have had an affair with a fan, nonetheless. Toru has been voice acting for over 50 years, so he's an older gentleman, which I know, Jordan, you might have some comments about that. With some of his notable roles, including Amuro from Mobile Suit Gundam, Sabo from One Piece, Yamcha from Dragon Ball, Toro from Detective Conan, and Tuxedo Mask from Sailor Moon. He admitted to having an affair with a 33-year-old female fan for 4 years, starting in 2019. During the relationship, he became violent towards the fan.
Oh.
After an altercation at his villa, the fan ended up calling the police, but he was able to take her phone away from her.
Wow.
When she eventually did escape, he ran after her apologizing. The police did end up arriving and questioned both of them.
Oh, wow.
And she was able to talk to them as he was hiding in his room. It's also reported that she did become pregnant during the relationship.
Oh my God.
Unclear if it was his child, but when she reached out to him with the news, he told her to terminate the pregnancy, which she eventually did. He did acknowledge the affair in a post on Twitter. And Jordan, maybe I'll get to you first for your reaction.
What do you mean? What do you mean? We're not sure if it's his. Like, okay.
Well, he inquired. Is it really my child?
Hey, terminate the pregnancy. I don't know if it's mine, but terminate. Like, I think it's his.
What were you gonna say he did on Twitter?
Oh, he acknowledged the whole situation and made an apology.
You know what's crazy? I want you to jump in, Jordan, but I just want to say it's crazy how much people in I feel like nowadays think an apology can just excuse behavior. Assaulted her, raped her, imprisoned her, like did all the he's like, I did all of those things, but crazy. I'm sorry.
No, it's absolutely crazy, dude. Like, I mean, one, the age difference is wild. He's like 40 years older than her, and even
you,
I have
you're,
not
you're
been
not
40.
The person, you're not the one to be saying that.
I have not been to 40 years older territory, though I would not say that I am opposed to that. It's definitely wild, first of all, just like picking up a fan. Like, I'm like, dang, bro, like you can't like picking it like, you know, that's also that. They're not young like R. Kelly, but that's the kind of thing R. Kelly, like using your fame to end up trying to get girls in that way, I think is a little bit questionable in the first place. But also just like, do they have cancel culture in Japan? You know, like is this dude going to continue voicing Sabo? Like, it's like a
no
big
idea.
Deal.
Well, so I heard from Samir and Assad that in Japan, the conviction rate is like extremely high for like criminal offenses. That apparently the, you know, defense, what you can't really get great legal defense in Japan. So it wouldn't surprise, like if all of this is true, and based off of that, I kind of expect him to be in jail, not just cancel. Like, you know what I mean? Like he committed crimes, right?
Yeah.
So I don't even think
true,
this is a matter of cancel culture.
Bro, you think they're gonna give him a mic?
I'm like, voice act from prison.
Hey, Sabo hasn't shown up in a little while, right? Like, it might be a little like Sabo showed up in this panel and he was just silent. Like, you know, they might just show up in prison with a mic.
No, I don't. I can't imagine that. I can't imagine that. Yeah. That's just the age difference to me. I was just like, whatever. She's, you know, I know you said get into like arc, but you know. She's like 33 or whatever.
No, sorry. I didn't mean it that way.
Yeah. She's 33. You know, even if he's like in his 70s, like people have like people have their preferences, right? And I'm sure him being who he was maybe played into it a little bit, but she's a consenting adult. She made a decision to, you know, be physical with an older dude. That I didn't, but then you start hearing the rest of this story and it's just like, it escalated so quickly. And when do you know when all of this came out, Alex? Like how long ago was all of this exposed?
I think he tweeted in the past week. I can confirm that quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is
because,
I'm seeing 2 days ago, 3 days ago on the internet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm surprised that he's honestly, that he hasn't been arrested yet, or doesn't, I haven't heard that he's been arrested to this point, right? Because these are all serious bribes that he's done.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, man. I read a Japanese novel that's pretty popular called The Devotion of Suspect X. And in this novel, this woman has an abusive ex-husband show up, and he's basically just like, you know, being violent to her. He ends up getting killed, and that's what the whole mystery is about. Long story, how to dispose of the body, long story short. But he's like showing up, and he's like, "What, you think that, who do you think the police are going to believe if I beat you? They're going to say, oh, that's your husband, so that's okay." So I'm like, I don't know what these rules are in Japan, is basically what I'm getting to, as far as like what pieces of this he's actually potentially going to be arrested for and how they're going to look at it. Because I definitely remember reading that and thinking, wow, Japan, you got some crazy rules if like this dude
But he
is acting
acknowledged
this way.
that he did it, right? He admitted to like the story being
Not,
true on
but it was
I
a
missed
matter
to
of
the
whether
affair.
or not.
Oh, okay, to the affair.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the alleged violence.
Okay.
And in this book, it was the idea that even if he had been violent, it's like, well, that's my wife. So like, I'm like, you know,
Hey.
it was just interesting to me
Yeah.
it was interesting to me and my ex-wife, sorry, I was my ex-wife. So it's interesting to me to wonder kind of what the rules are, if it's the same there as it would be and what we would imagine here.
Yeah, you would know better than me. I don't really know how Japan gets down, but I we'll see how well they can tolerate domestic abuse, I guess.
We will see that.
Yeah. All
Alex,
right,
what do
Alex.
we got for the last segment? Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a story from the Masters. The two-time Masters champion and world's number one ranked golfer, Scottie Scheffler, was arrested after police say he dragged an officer while trying to get around the scene of a fatal accident. This was last Friday, and it's just before the second round of the PGA Championship. So a police officer instructed Scheffler to stop, but Scheffler continued to drive about 10 to 20 yards toward the entrance. At one point, an officer attached himself to the side of Scheffler's car, which he did eventually stop as he turned into the entrance of Valhalla Golf Club. After about 20 to 30 seconds, Scheffler rolled down his window to talk to the officer. The officer grabbed his arm to pull him out of the vehicle. And he now faces charges of second degree assault of a police officer, third degree criminal mischief, reckless driving, and disregarding traffic signals from an officer directing traffic.
Yeah, to me, I heard this story and it was, I think you're gonna have a unique perspective on this as an athlete yourself, but it was the embodiment of entitlement. I was like, I couldn't. There is a fatal car accident. Traffic
Right.
is. You have a police officer who's telling you can't go, and you're just like, hey, I have a competition I need to be at. These rules don't apply to me, and. What I want to ask you also, you can tell me if I'm tripping by saying this is entitled of him to act this way. But if you had, let's say you were in the Olympics and you were going to be late, are you doing this same thing? Are you breaking the traffic laws to get to your race on
I'm
time?
definitely not driving through it to the point where the officer attaches himself to the side of the car. I would definitely be kind of freaking out. I would be stressed. I would be like, oh my God, I'll be trying to figure. Now, I also would be getting there at the point that is early enough that I would not be worried about how, you know, oh, there's a traffic stop. Like, okay, fine. Like, you know, it would be the kind of thing where normally I get there 2 hours early and like I warm up an hour early. And now this whole thing is taking a little bit longer, right? So now I only have 15 minutes that I'm there before I warm up. But no, like there's no way this is acceptable, right?
Yeah,
de
okay.
definitely
I'm
not as
glad.
an
I'm glad we're on
athlete.
the same page
No,
here. Yeah.
no. Like, don't get me wrong, I'll be stressing, but definitely not as an athlete. Like, your competition is important, but you have to understand that there's things like this that can happen. And you also have to, whether it's in terms of just like staying close to where your competition is, staying in an area that's nearby, like getting there in an amount of time that is reasonable. It strikes me that probably an athlete like Scottie Scheffler is already doing those things. And he was just kind of like freaking out, being entitled. And this is like totally ridiculous. Like, at the very least, get out of your car and be like, yo, like, I'm this dude. Like, seriously, this is me. Please, is there any way you can let me go? Don't try and drive through it. That's insane.
Right. Like, the cop, honestly, obviously he should, for his own safety, he shouldn't be hanging on to the side of a car and stuff like that. It's not worth your life. But he doesn't know that you're a professional golfer. He doesn't know that you're in this competition. And honestly, it doesn't matter that you're in this competition because the same rules apply to you that apply to everybody else. And I actually thought it was kind of funny that it was a golfer because I feel like if I were to rank like athletes in terms of entitlement, I feel like golf would be pretty high up on the list. You know,
yeah, it's the most likely person to do that.
Yeah, it's like a game that's expensive to play. You know, there's like a lot of gatekeeping. I feel like I feel like a lot of this is just, you know, correlated with entitlement. So this dude clearly thought the rules didn't apply to him, and you know, he found out that they did. You know,
and I'm pretty sure his next round of golf was really bad. I don't remember it. I'm pretty sure I heard it on the podcast. I'm pretty sure he did not play well that day.
Yeah, I would imagine. I would imagine he didn't.
Yeah. But that is all we have for time today. Thank you, Alex, your friend who produced this podcast, for helping out behind the scenes. Come back next Sunday to hear what we've got to say about the next piece of the 1116 reveal. Emu, in the meantime, we are your friends who read One Piece. Help us get more friends by liking us, rating us, reviewing us wherever you get your podcasts. Check us on YouTube at Friends Who Read One Piece. And we're on Twitter now at FWROP Pod.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you.